Support comes from Hampton Roads Community Foundation, partnering with donors from all walks of life to improve Southeastern Virginia through grants, scholarships, and leadership initiatives. Learn more at HamptonRoadsCF.org.
Hello, everyone. I'm Barbara Hamlee. Welcome to our live broadcast from Cape Charles on Virginia's Eastern Shore. We are so happy to be here at the restored Cape Charles Elementary School, now known as the Impact Center. During the next hour of Another View, we'll learn the history of this Washington Rosenwald School, talk with former alum about their experiences, and find out about programs that will benefit the community today. All this and more is coming up when we come back with from the national, regional, and local news from NPR and WHRO News.
Discussing today's topics from an African-American perspective, this is Another View.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Another View. I'm Barbara Hamlee. We're live in front of a studio audience in the studio here in Cape Charles. Yes. We're at the historic Cape Charles Elementary School. This is a school that educated black students on the Eastern Shore during segregation. And we also want to say a very special thank you and welcome to those of you listening to us on 90.1 WHRX Nassauwattocks or 91.9 WHRE Eastville. We're here in your neighborhood, so we're glad that you are here. Thank you so much. And we have a full house. We are seated, I believe, in the Harmony Center. Okay, we're in Harmony Hall, and we're going to learn much more about this building and about the history in just a moment. So, you know, this school was one of the more than 5,000 so-called Rosenwald schools, a partnership between Booker T. Washington and philanthropist Julius Rosenwald to improve education for African-American students. Joining us to talk about this history, student life, and what the school means today is Tavia Griffin, founder and current president of the Board of Directors for the Cape Charles Rosenwald School Restoration Initiative. Hey, Tavia, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you, Barbara?
I'm great. Great, thank you so much. Cindy Waldo, who was a student at the school from 1962 to 64, from first to third grade, I believe that was. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning. And next to her is Richard Press, another alum who attended the school from 1956 to 59, also from first to third grade. How you doing?
Good morning, Barbara. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. And finally, William Weeks, who is the executive director of the Cape Charles Rosenwald School Restoration Initiative, also known as the Impact Center. How you doing?
I'm fine. Good morning, Barbara. How are you?
I tell you what. So you need to do like the Quiet Storm, like on the radio. I'm just saying.
Why have to do that?
It is so good to meet you. Now, before we get into our conversation, some background on the Rosenwald Schools from Another View producer, Lisa Godley.
Throughout history, the Rosenwald School Project has been applauded for the role it played narrowing the literacy gap between black and white students during the bulk of the Jim Crow segregation era. While Jim Crow began at the end of the Civil War, several decades would pass before the project would begin. It was 1912 when the head of Tuskegee Institute, Booker T. Washington, would encourage his friend, philanthropist Julius Rosenwald, to provide the funding that would allow Tuskegee Institute to construct six schools for black children in rural Alabama. Within a year, Rosenwald, the president of Sears Roebuck & Company, would donate tens of thousands of dollars to build an additional 300 schools across the South. Following the death of Washington, Rosenwald set up the Julius Rosenwald Fund. Its purpose? The well-being of mankind. This philanthropic effort has been tapped as the largest school building program in U.S. history. More than $70 million would be used to build and sustain schools, colleges, universities, museums, and Black institutions. The fund would spend millions constructing about 5,300 schools across 15 states dedicated to the education of Black children. Here in Virginia, there were 382 Rosenwald schools and auxiliary buildings constructed. About 126 still stand. Most were two classroom buildings made of wood. However, there were a few, like the one in Cape Charles, that was brick. The formula for building the schools would require white school boards to commit to the maintenance and the Black communities to aid in construction as well as funding. The amount of money raised by Black communities across southern states was substantial, close to $5 million in total, a clear indication of the importance placed on the education of Black children. For Another View, I'm Lisa Godley.
So, Cindy, take us back. What was Cape Charles like back there in the 50s and 60s? You know, you went to school in the early 60s, I believe. But what was it like living here? Give us a sense of the community.
Growing up in Cape Charles, we realize now was a blessing because the families, they were families, our neighbors. We were very close to them. I was talking to Mr. Press here. We were so blessed when we came along because we had school buses. We didn't have to walk to school. And just coming to school and learning, and there was no nonsense, so you did learn. You had your Pledge of Allegiance every day and you're just learning different things and being respectful and can't wait till the next day to go to school because just riding the bus alone was exciting for us. But Cape Charles, it was a very nice place, a very comfortable. You could leave your doors open. You didn't have to worry about anything. So we were truly blessed.
So when you walked in this building, what memories or what were the emotions that came to you?
Well, I can remember my first and second grade. It was in the same room. All you did was went right across to the other side because it wasn't that many children and had the same teacher for the first and second grade. And it so happened that she wound up being my neighbor. Yes, yeah. But and also the third grade. And I remember that teacher came from North Carolina. And that's pretty much it. And then after that, we were integrated, and I went over to Cape Charles Public Schools.
From there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But like I said, it was one great memory that I have. I did go to school in New York, and elementary and junior high. And one day a word was on the board and nobody knew it. And it was Emancipation Proclamation. And I raised my hand. It touches me now. I didn't actually know what it meant, but I knew I heard that word at Cape Charles School. Mm-hmm.
What about you, Richard? When you walked back in, now that the school has been renovated and stuff, what emotions came up for you?
Well, the first thing I think about is Mrs. Ames, because I was afraid of her. I think most of the students were afraid of her. She was an excellent teacher. But I think about mostly playing outside in the yard. We played all these different games like marbles, a lot of games that a lot of kids don't play today. You know, we played hopscotch and we wrestled. We had some really fun times fighting because the fighting back then was different. You know, it was if you got somebody on the ground, just get up and let them go. But things are different now. So I think mostly about my experiences outside of the school. And I remember our school principal, Mr. Hare, you know, he used to ring a bell when we were outside. We didn't have any type of technology. So he would come out and he would just take this bell or a blowhorn and he would just ring it and you just came back into school and sat down. So that's one of the memories I have.
Mm-hmm. Tavia, you know, when you started the restoration, because you're the founder, I understand, of the Restoration Initiative, and now on the board also, but what made you look at this building and say, we have to do something?
I have no idea. I just know that it was, it just seemed like it was significant, and I wanted to know why. And it didn't make sense to me that it was just sitting here and not being used.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the 70s, it was actually, after the school closed because of integration, it actually was used as a seafood processing plant, I understand?
Yes, it was actually a very prosperous eel packing plant.
Eel.
I love eel, E-E-L. Eel packing plant that, from my understanding, shipped eel to France.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, okay. And so it was very popular, but it closed down, so for over 40 years it sat vacant.
So it just sat here on this property, just vacant?
Yes.
What was it like? Give us a sense of what was happening.
Well, all of the windows, you couldn't see the windows, and they were covered by wood, and it had the name of Robert on the outside. It had for sale, and not F-O-R, but for, the number four, and then sale. It was faded. There were roots coming out of the original roof, and it just looked like probably there was somebody in there, but you didn't want to find out if it was.
So you said, okay, we need to do something, but how did you rally the community? How did you guys come together?
Well, first I talked to my grandmother to find out, did she go here? And then did she know anyone that knew here? And she said, well, I think Miss Davis went there. Miss Davis is an alumni, and she also happened to be my hard teacher in high school. And so I called her, and sure enough, she went there. And there were some other people that she knew that went there, and we put a meeting together. We had some people from town council come, and the planner came, and we had the alumni come in the morning, and then we had lunch, and we had the town people come and to sit down and talk together. So my husband and I made sandwiches, and and everybody came to First Baptist Church to talk about it.
And they decided that it was worth it?
They decided that the history was worth it. At the time, the price of the building was too much for anyone to reasonably afford. And so we knew what it was assessed for, and we knew what it was going for. And so really then it became a quest to preserve the history of what happened in this building and the community surrounding the history of the building.
So tell us some of the history that you learned about the building.
Well, there's so much, and so I will just start some of the things we heard Ms. Lisa already say, but there were actually four of these schools built on the Eastern Shore, one in Northampton County and then three in Accomack County. And this school opened in 1929. It was built by contractor C.J. Russell. And really in the 1921 is when a group of African-American men that were from the town started going and talking to the town council, asking them, we need to have a public school built. At that time, African-American children were meeting in a church. And they would lobby for around 8 years, and they put money together, and they wanted to buy a property that was at the corner of 13, the main thoroughfare, and the road coming into Cape Charles. And the town council, and you can see this in the minutes, the town council said, no, we do not want a Negro school at the gateway of Cape Charles. That would not look right. But these men were persistent. They kept going back to town council, and a property came up for sale for $600 next to the town dump. And that was and the decision was made to allow the school to be built next to the dump. So that's where the school was built. And Rosenwald put money together, but altogether the building was around $16,000.
That was an enormous amount of money back in that day.
It was. Yeah. And the Rosenwald Fund put together around $1,600, but the African American community put together $1,000 to give to the school, and the remainder was from the town money, I think of the state fund.
And also they put in the sweat equity, the black community did.
That's correct.
To actually build the building.
That's right.
Wow. I want to ask our two alum, because, you know, there's always controversy or always a yes and a no when you talk about a segregated school versus an integrated school. And I know both of you are very proud of the education that you received here, but I wonder if you could talk about, Mr. Price, the difference that you felt being here at this school versus when you joined other schools for integration.
Sure. So, well, first thing is that we had to walk to school every day, rain, snow, whatever. My walk was about a mile from here. I lived on Madison Avenue, and we were expected to make the perfect attendance. Well, our parents and our teachers expected us to make the perfect attendance. Didn't matter what the weather was. One of the first things I noticed, too, was that this school didn't have a bathroom in it. And you kind of wonder, you know, for a nice brick building to be built without bathrooms. So our bathroom was, if you look to your immediate right, you'll see the woods. That was our bathroom. Okay, it wasn't until years later that they actually put a bathroom in. And someone said that, yeah, you know, we had bathrooms. So I looked up the schematic, the architectural plans for this building. It wasn't even in, a bathroom wasn't even a part of the architectural plans, okay? I noticed also that our school was situated right behind the city dump. So during our recess period, we had a lot of great smells to look forward to. And then I noticed that Northampton County High School was also situated right in front of the city cesspool. So you can imagine that all of our schools were being put in places that seemed to be well planned. When we lived in Cape Charles, I lived on Madison Avenue, and the whites lived on one side, and the indigenous, and a lot of times you hear me say indigenous because I am, lived on the other side. We kind of stayed out of each other's way, but on the weekends when you go downtown, it was a different story. There were certain places that we could not go, that we could not eat in, that we could not stand around, like what used to be the Palace Theater now, and the drugstore next to it. We could order things at the counter. You know, that was about it. I have to say that things have changed 1,000% now. You know, the Palace Theater, the Lemon Tree are really some really fantastic, marvelous places to go. But coming here, sometimes we would get rides to school, sometimes we would get rides home. But for the most part, this was our haven. When we left our home and crossed the hump, this was our haven. We didn't have to worry about segregation. We didn't have to worry about not being treated right or not standing around a particular place. This was us. This was our community. And our parents knew it, and our teachers knew it. And I'll say one other thing about Mrs. Ames. I told you I was scared of her, but the reason being is that there was a day they had here in Cape Charles Elementary where your brothers or sisters could bring a smaller child. And I wasn't in school then, but my brothers were here. And just as a visit, you know. And my brother Joe, he wanted to show me how much authority he had as being a second grader. And when Mr. Hare rung the bell for everybody to come in, my brother Joe, you know, he wanted to take his time. He wanted to show me, you know, he has some pull here. And so by the time we got into school, I noticed that it was very, very quiet. Everybody was in class, and I heard these footsteps, and they were ringing in my ears, and it was Mrs. Ames. And she came down that hall. She looked to be about 40 feet tall at that time to me. And she came, and she took my brother Joe up by the ears, which it looked like, and she lifted him and took him back to the classroom. His feet were kicking like a little fish. And I found out later on that she really didn't pick him up by the ears. It just looked that way. And I said then that I never wanted to be in that lady's class. But when my time came to be in the first grade, she was my teacher, and I cried, you know, most of the time. But I found out later on that this lady was so intelligent, and she taught so many children the basics. She taught me how to draw the alphabets, the ABCs. And so I talk about it a lot, but she was really very influential in my life.
Yeah. What about you, Cindy?
In the town of Cape Charles, where I grew up, over on what we call Peach Street, or up in the, we had two sections, Jersey and Sweet Kingdom, so we called it at the time. But we weren't allowed to come downtown. The only time we came to Mason Avenue is when we needed to buy some shoes or something like that. We had to stay within our neighborhood. In the school, when we were integrated, a group of us just sat together, and we didn't mingle at all. Even if you saw somebody in the grocery store, they just act like they didn't see you or anything like that.
Did you mingle at school?
No, not even at school.
Not even at school.
Like recess time, mm-hmm. we hung together. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And even we didn't have, even upper later years, we didn't have a prom together until later 80s, until they almost time for them to get to close. Our parents.
So the black students had a prom separate, and the white students had a prom.
Our parents and we got together and we raised money and we used one of the hotels to have our prom.
Oh my goodness.
So that happened for quite a few years. And then the first prom that they had together, we did have a black queen mm-hmm. and white king.
And white king.
So, yeah.
I always hear people talk about the teachers and how critical the teachers were in terms of making sure that you all learned everything that you needed to know, including black history. Do you recall? Or do you recall the difference in the way that you may have been taught here versus the other schools you wound up going to?
I say that with me, it wasn't a great teaching at all. But I guess you could have put more. I'm gonna just say for myself, when I came back to Cape Charles, and I was in high school, not understanding about. Point systems, getting you in college and everything. I had three home ecs, two study halls. I mean, things like that, because I wasn't set aside with a counselor telling you all that you needed to have in order to graduate, or not only graduate, you graduated because you didn't have too much, you know. You had a math, you had an English, but no electives, no anything. It just wasn't a good thing, so.
You know, I've heard, and I'm wondering, Mr. Price, if you would tell me, were you told that your options were to go in the military and not to go to college?
To go to the military, uh-huh. besides one college?
I mean, from your counselors. We hear a lot that was a common way of counselors talking to African-American students, telling them.
Some of our counselors would tell us to... that the military was a sure bet, that you can get in there, you're assured that you're going to have a salary, and if you do well, you can get promoted. But for a large period of time, they did not encourage college because they thought about the financial situation. And finances were, you know, if you didn't get a scholarship, you know, you didn't have too much opportunity. But there were a lot of us that went to college, and when I say a lot, I mean a lot. And we have doctors out here, we have engineers, we have artists, we have architects. We didn't let those type of comments stop us. But we had a really, really good counselor. Her name was Mrs. Smith. She was the principal's wife. And so she was a very compassionate person. Mm-hmm.
If you're just joining us, we're coming to you live from the historic Cape Charles Elementary School, now known as the Impact Center. It's in Another View History Lesson. Our guests are Tavia Griffin, Board President for the Cape Charles Rosenwald School Restoration Initiative, William Weeks, Executive Director of the Impact Center, along with Cindy Waldo and Richard Press, both alum of the school. William, I know we haven't heard from you yet, and I do want to talk with you about what the restoration means today for the community today.
Absolutely. So one of the amazing things, as you listen to everyone up here who's been really talking about the history, you hear the legacy. And one of the things that's been really special to me and special to this entire movement, and I do consider it a movement, is that we are still paying it forward by standing on the foundation, the legacy that was here with this building and all of the wonderful educational opportunities that it afforded. And now as a community center, as a hub, we look at this as a place for lifelong learning. So if I can, I will talk to you a little bit about some of the things that we have going on. One of the key or one of the major priorities that we have going on right now is with workforce development. We have established an amazing relationship and a partnership with our local Eastern Shore Community College, who has been working very tirelessly with us to mirror workforce development classes from the school actually here into our building. So for those of you who may not be familiar, here in Northampton County, when you look at having to travel to the community college, that's quite a distance. And depending on how far south you are, you know, you could be looking at an hour drive. So one of the things that we want to look at is also how do we remove barriers? And we know that transportation is absolutely a barrier for many residents here. So by having those classes here, our GED classes, English as second language, digital literacy, and so on and so forth, people have access to those classes right here in their back door here in Northampton County. And having to travel northward to go to the community colleges is not a challenge. So we're super excited about that portion of what we have going on. Also, you know, you've heard the alumni talk a lot about history. So our cultural preservation is really special because, you know, we live in a time where realistically a lot of, in particular the African-American history, is really not being taught or is really being erased. So here we feel it's super important that we are preserving that through our digital artifacts, allowing the community to come in to take tours where we get to show a lot of through historical exhibits, a lot of what the alumni here have been talking about. But what's so great about it is when we do a lot of our tours, and as we've been working with public schools and having the students to come, it's an intergenerational approach, which is wonderful because now you get to hear and see history being told by folks who lived it and not just something that you're reading in a book. And because we realize that things have to live in the digital world when we look at the minimization of space, you get to come here and you do a tour. We talk about the importance of the Washington Rosenwald Partnership. You know, we talk about all of the different experiences that the alumni have had, and all of that is right here within the building. So that's very special to us too, and it has been very well received from all of those who have come to take tours, and especially for the students from public schools who we have had here who really enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. We also have going on with us our commercial kitchen, our business incubation model. Again, when we're looking at small businesses who are looking to thrive and grow, you know, they have access to a commissary kitchen where they can come in. And if they have canning needs, or if you are that small business and you are a caterer who is looking to expand your business, but you really need a place where you can come and do meal preparation, we have that, and that's absolutely available for those, you know, who would like to take that as an opportunity or take advantage of that. Also, we're looking at where we can utilize our commissary kitchen for different classes, so culinary arts classes. And we're already working to secure agreements with folks in the community who would like to come in to do things of that nature, and who are doing manufacturing with their own products. So we're super excited about that. We also have a grant that you will be seeing here that we will be working on very vigorously for the fall and for the time to come that we received, where we can start doing some youth programming, after-school youth programming that we will have here at the Impact Center. I had a focus that was really specific more with music. We know music is a universal language. And when we deal with the youth, you always want something that they will find to be interesting, to get them here into the building, to want to learn, to want to look at, you know, other opportunities that they can take advantage of. So through this grant here, with this, they'll get to learn the other side of sound and music. We all know that there's things about sound and music that we love, but we don't know why. So there's that science, there's that mathematics, there's the engineering portion of it. So they get to come here, they'll get to learn about that, but they also get to be a part of something that they really enjoy. And then once that project is over, we're scheduling this where the community will get to come in and to see what they were able to create, through their music. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, lots and lots of things going on, keeping that educational bent happening. Tavia, has there been any pushback in terms of this school being restored, in terms of the history?
I wouldn't call it pushback. We have heard thoughts about what it should be and what it should not be. We've heard people say, where are you really reaching the populations that you should reach? And we've had questions about the changing of the name.
I was going to bring that up.
I know you were. That's why I brought it up before you. So I think, just starting with that, the name of this building has always been Cape Charles Elementary. And I would dare you to say anything else, because the alumni will let you know that it is Cape Charles Elementary. However, because the school was what we call a Rosenwald school, people started relating to the school as Cape Charles Rosenwald School. When for the community, they were like, well, what's that? They had no idea. So the alumni at first didn't even know what a Rosenwald school was. They knew it as Cape Charles Elementary. So when we decided to change the name to the Impact Center, that was for several reasons. One, we wanted people to understand the legacy. And even before it became the Impact Center, William was saying, it already had impact. The impact was the people that you see on the stage, the thousands of people that graduated, African Americans that graduated from Rosenwald Schools, like Maya Angelou and others like that, that were impactful in the United States, impactful in the world. And then we thought about, okay, what do we want to do later with this building? And it came back to impact. And so for us, it seemed natural, and it seemed like, okay, this is a good thing.
And you all actually include Booker T. Washington. You call it the Washington Rosenwald School, because that usually is just Rosenwald.
Usually it's just Rosenwald. We actually got that from Brent Legs, who was just named the president and CEO of the National Trust for Preservation.
Yes, he will be in Williamsburg in October.
He will be in Williamsburg in October. I will be there, too.
Yes, I will, too.
But we got a grant from them. So these beautiful windows that you see, the original windows, was because they were in the attic, and they were restored by grant through that that organization. And he coined that, and his point of coining Washington Rosenwald was because Washington is the one who had the idea. He had the idea, and then he went to Rosenwald to help him with the idea. But we had forgot about that, and we had taken him out. So we wanted to have that back. So there was never a thought of erasing history. It was more being more inclusive and including the people in their rightful place who made this happen.
Who made it happen. Mm-hmm. So we did receive an email, and I bring this up because I think that in this email, this person was very concerned in a not so positive way about the building. And I think that a lot of the comments that this individual made come from not understanding the times and also not understanding exactly what was going on. So I'm not going to read the whole thing, but one of the realities that they talk about, and I'd love for you guys, William and Tavia in particular, to react to this. His first bullet point is, he says, the reality of the situation today is the gentrification of Cape Charles finds the town devoid of young Black families who might otherwise utilize the refurbished building. I wanted to get you guys' response to that. And I'll do the next bullet point.
Well, I would say, and I jumped in front of William, but I will say, one, the first thing that he said is correct. There has been a gentrification of Cape Charles. That is a true fact. We find the fact that this building has refurbished is a good thing. And we want programming, and we want to be a space where people feel like they can come. This audience now, it's mostly Caucasian, but this is a mixed audience. Mm-hmm. And that's what we want to see. While this building was used for just African Americans, the alumni themselves have said, we want this building to be for everyone. And we want everyone to feel welcome to come here. And that is one of our jobs, to make sure that we get the word out and we have that community engagement for people to know, African American community, to know they can be here.
William, I'm going to throw this one to you. He says, lack of an Eastern Shore transportation system will ensure few, if any, of our black youngsters who live in the trailer parks and public housing far off Route 13 will never set foot in the building.
Yeah, and as I mentioned earlier, yes, we realize that transportation is a humongous barrier here on the Eastern Shore. But once again, I think that's why we're being very, in our approach to programming, I think we're being very intentional about how we are trying to design programs and also looking to reach out when we can to our local transportation authority to see if we can schedule programming or if there's a partnership that we can create to actually work with them to have folks to come in or to even work through some of our local churches and see if there are volunteers and folks who would be willing to provide some transportation services when possible and if possible. So transportation is a humongous beast if anybody's ever dealt with that. So it's not an easy answer, but I think we have been working very intentionally to ensure that when we look at programming and events, that that's also being taken into consideration because we want this to be a place for everyone and we want people to feel welcome.
So, and this is just so curious to me. He says there is no evidence of programming intended to attract the Eastern Shore's lower class. Is this a high class place?
Not at all. So one thing, I'm sure Tavon may have something to say, but one thing that I would say that's absolutely not true, even when we look at our workforce development model, you know, we're looking at having classes here regardless of where you may be, regardless of your socioeconomic status or culture. You know, and again, for this upcoming fall, you know, we have GED classes and we're having those ESL classes and digital literacy. So we're being thoughtful about having programming that spans the masses for your older adults, for youth. You know, so when we look at our programming, again, we want to make sure that we are covering the broad spectrum of folks that live here. And it's not based upon one's economic status, but we're looking at what the needs are and how we can be impactful with coordinating efforts to try to address them.
Go ahead, Mr. Price. I'll let you talk first.
I was going to say, you know, if you always operate at a low level, if you always do that, you'll never attain a higher level. I don't look at this building as part of regentrification. I look at it as a rebirth. When we were coming up in school, our history, we had history courses, but doesn't mean that we were getting the right history. Why does it take 20, 30 years after you get out of high school to look back at your hometown and learn some things that you should have learned that was not in the United States textbook? You know, why wasn't things more geared toward here? Why didn't we learn about the indigenous people? Why didn't we learn about the history of this school? Most of the people that left this school never heard of Rosenwald. I never heard about Rosenwald until recently, thanks to Tavia. Even in high school, some of the textbooks, you know, we talk a lot today about destroying history of the African Americans. Well, you know, if you go back, this is not something that's just happening. When I was in high school, we had textbooks, even in elementary school, that complete chapters were torn out of the books. You know, we got our books from the so-called white school. They were handed down to us while the other schools got new texts. We got the old texts, and complete chapters were torn out. So when the instructor says, you know, let's turn to chapter 3, and I go to my textbook and chapter 3 is not there, I raise my hand. I don't have chapter 3. Then you hear cries across the room. Oh, I don't have it either. I don't have it either. What was in those chapters? Why are they all taken out from the textbooks? One thing that was not taken from the textbooks was the inside covers where we could see names that people called us, you know, despicable names. Mm-hmm. We lived with those. We lived with those. Our parents taught us not to accept it, but we didn't have to do anything about it at that particular time. So, yeah, our history is new to us for the most part. You ever heard of new history? I don't know. But that's what it was. So it still bothers me to this day to think about all the information that I could have had and that I didn't have.
That is such a powerful statement. Our history is new to us. Mm-hmm. That hits home. You guys had a reunion when the doors opened, right?
Yes.
And I want to hear from the alum first in terms of what, and Cindy, I'll start with you. What were people doing? What were they saying? Were they amazed? Were they crying? Were they glad to see each other? Give us a sense of what it was like.
They were glad to see each other because, you know, so many people moved away to find better jobs and things like that. And just to see people that you hadn't seen for 20, 30 years or more, it was real good. It was a great day. And just a picture of all of us just standing up front here. And you can go back and, like, my sisters and brothers went here as well, so I can go back and point out to them some of the schoolmates that they had. So it was a great day. We had a great time.
You had a good time, too, wasn't
it? I had a fantastic time. You know, one of the things, we got to see who was still living. And if somebody didn't show up, we ask about them, you know. And unfortunately, sometimes, you know, those of us that that didn't make it to the reunion for one reason or another. But it was a very heartfelt time. I have a brother named Joe who refuses to come to Cape Charles because of what we experienced when we were growing up. But he did come to the reunion, and it kind of changed his mind when he met some of the people the administrators of this building. And it kind of changed his mind. And I said, things are changing, Joe. A lot of the people that are here in Cape Charles now are not the people that were back there when we were growing up, you know. And the attitude, people speak to each other. I had some people come over from the Hampton, and I said, one thing you got to do, you have to speak to people, you know. And we got out of the car, and there was some people that got out of their cars about six or seven cars down, and they waved. And the people that I was with didn't wave. I said, look, wait a minute. Didn't I tell you? You have the people here speak. I don't know what's on their minds, but they speak. Cape Charles people speak to each other. And
hospitality, that Cape Charles hospitality. Absolutely. Tavia, you put your heart, soul, mind, everything into making this. What was that day like for you?
So that day actually was, we had an alumni committee and they put that together. But the board was very intentional. We wanted the alumni to know. We also wanted the community to know, to speak against things that you just named, that this building was the alumni's building. And we wanted them to be the first partakers. We wanted them to walk in this building first and really experience it. And so it was a lovely day. It was a gentleman, he came. He spoke, and one of the things that the alumni committee did is that they gave, certificates to all of the alumni that were there, and they wanted to acknowledge them. And they had each one of them stand up, and they had them come to the front. And one of the gentlemen that came, his brother reached out to us later, and he said, I don't know what you guys did to my brother. And we were like, what are you talking about? He came, I don't know if it was from Mississippi or Louisiana, one of those southern states. And he said he wasn't going to come, again, because of what he had went through. And he had also been to different wars, and it just impacted him. He said he came back, and he was just a changed man. He says, what did y'all do? He says, what he said y'all did was y'all acknowledged him. You all acknowledged him, and I think Miss Sabrina, I think I saw her in the audience, she called out their names, and she recognized his service, and she said, thank you for your service. Mm-hmm. And his brother emailed us and said, he's a changed man.
Wow.
It was wonderful. It was
impact
awesome.
To this day. William, what was it like for you? Because you came in October, I believe, of last year as the new executive director.
Yeah, I tell you what, just coming in, I thought it was really special. And for me, I knew then from that event that this was a place for me because I just loved the unity. I loved everything that particular event stood for. And just to sit and to watch the alumni, and I tell you what stood out to me was to watch the alumni walk in the building. And you could see them in different pockets of the building. They could tell you what they were doing when they were younger and what was happening and what was going on. And then in another pocket of the building, you would see them just hugging and holding each other. And that would go on for, you know, all throughout the day, they would just hug and hold each other. So it was really special. And I think it really solidified for me that this was the place where I really needed to be and where I felt that there would be so much impactful change being done here with this work.
So, William, what room are we in now? Let's talk about the building and the different, like when it was school, when what was happening in this room that we're currently in?
So, this,
go ahead.
Yeah. So this is Harmony Hall here, and I'm not quite sure. I think maybe I will toss this one to the alumni,
to one of our alumni,
who could talk specifically what they remember was happening in this room, and then I'll come back to it and talk a little bit about why we named it Harmony Hall.
Well, this room was where we first gathered every day we came in. All the students gathered in this room, and we had an assembly. We had to have prayer, we had Bible verses, we had the Pledge of Allegiance, and whatever words that the principal wanted to give us to start our day. It was always something very positive, always something positive. Positive in a stern way, okay? So, and then after we left this room, then we went to our classrooms.
Okay, and what were the classrooms like?
They were just very small, and like you said, stern.
You said you had two grades.
Yes.
In
when you first come in the door, rooms on the right hand side there.
Ah.
That was like first and second grade, right in that area, and third. Yeah.
Okay.
So, So like you said, you broke off and you went with your teacher. And like you listen because you might get that ear pulled or that ruler or something like that. So, yeah.
And William, you said you wanted to talk about why you named it Harmony Hall.
Yeah, so it really wasn't my name per se, but I think when you think about Harmony Hall, this is a place, and just alluding back to what I said earlier as far as being a community center and a hub, but when we bring people all together. And when you look out here, this is truly a reflection of this right now. So everyone comes together with one mind, one sound, in harmony, together regardless of culture, race, what your social background is, it doesn't matter. But we can all come together on one common ground and for the good of the cause. And so when we think about this room, that's the reflection of that.
So I believe we asked this question earlier in the audience, but how many of you in the audience, this is the first time you've been in this building? So that's the majority of the audience. So you've expanded the word again. Absolutely. So, Tavia, I'm curious, are you in touch with other communities who are trying to revitalize their Rosenwald schools? Have you guys set a... kind of set the standard in terms of helping to fundraise and all that?
I'm sure we have not set the standard, even though it was a really hard job. I'm sure we have not set the standard. But there is a Rosenwald Association. Used to be in Virginia. I have not been in contact with them that much. Mm-hmm. At our Juneteenth celebration, we actually learned of the painter, Mr. Williams, I remember his last name, this is my maiden name. He and his wife purchased one of the Rosenwald schools in Accomack County. And they are looking for people to come together. They purchased it because they saw that it was in ruin and they really have no idea what to do with it. And they want ideas from the community and they want help from the community to figure it out. Mm-hmm. So they've talked to some of our people, but we are supposed to be meeting at some point to help them figure that out.
Why was this building brick as opposed to, because most, the majority of them were wood, right?
Yeah, so there were several different campaigns for construction. So the earlier campaign, the buildings were brick, were wood. And our campaign was later. It was more of a community plan, and they were larger. And this one was brick, happened to be brick.
Do we know how many students were here at any given year?
I don't. We had... We had someone doing that research, and we haven't narrowed that down. We do have a listing of the principals, but of course, it's the principals that the alumni remember. We're not sure if all of them are there, and if you come, you'll see some of their pictures on the walls. Mm-hmm. But we don't have the exact number of how many students.
So, but the number of students that went here—I just lost my train of thought. Anyway, what do you want people to walk away from? from when they come to visit this building?
One, I want them to see a resilience of a people, the resilience of the community, and I hope that translates to their life, that if there is any adversity in their life or something that someone has told them they can't do, they would see that they can do it. And I also hope that, just as William has said, that they would know that there is strength in unity and coming together. And one of our missions is to empower all. And so really the point of the Impact Center is to be a place that if you need help in different areas, and for us it's economic well-being, it's education, that you can come here and you can have that here. And even for people who are not on that side of needing the help, but if you are someone that's retired, or if you are an educator and you have a gift and you have something that you can bring, a skill set that you can bring, to know that you can come and talk to William, talk to our board members, and we will see how that fits, and to see if you'll be able to have those classes here.
How long did it take you all to do this?
So the pictures that you'll see of my daughter, my oldest daughter, she was 6 months at First Baptist when we put the first marker out there. My dear Eden is now 15. So that's like 15 years. But I will say, we did not purchase the building until 2019. Okay. So the rehab began in 2022. So really, if you look at that, two to three years.
We'll give you the COVID years.
Thank you. Right? Thank you.
What was the hardest part about fundraising for this? I mean, when you went to the community, were they, oh, yes, or did you really have to convince people that this was worth saving?
You know, honestly, most of the money that went to this building came from wonderful donors, individual donors and corporations. A lot of in-kind money was provided. And so I think sometimes the community thinks, well, they don't need any money. That is not true. We continue to need funding, and we continue to need funding for the programs to move on. So I think the hardest part was just, you know, sometimes we heard no, and then we finally got yeses.
And then you finally got it, yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, very quickly, because we're just about out of time. So, Cindy, last word you want to tell people about the school?
I'm proud to be an alumni of this school. That's what I want them to know.
Richard, you have something?
Well, I'm proud to be an alumni of this school also, but I just want us to remember that our history is very important. We should never discount our history. I'm reminded of James Baldwin when he said that when Gary Cooper used to fight the Indians, that we all rooted for the Cowboys until we realized that we were the Indians. So it's very important that we learn our history so we won't lose that mental competency.
And William, you get the very last word, and we're just about out of time.
When people walk through these doors, we want people to envision the future and truly imagine the possibilities of what can happen here.
That is fantastic. Thank you all so much for talking to us live from Cape Charles here at the Cape Charles Elementary Washington Rosenwald School. Our theme music is an original composition created especially for Another View by Jay Sennett. A very special thank you to Lisa Godley, our show producer, who put her heart and soul into producing this broadcast. And much appreciation for Jordan Christie and Victor Bowen for making sure that we sound great outside the studio. And also thanks to Dr. Barry Graham, who's monitoring this remote broadcast back in the WHRO studios. Also want to thank Kelsey Backey in marketing, Rhonda Hayes and Michelle Hinkerson from WHRO, and our volunteers, Troy Lemon, John Short, John Whalen, Pam Gritman, and Diane Davis. I'm Barbara Hamlee. Have a fantastic weekend, everyone. And let's get together again next Thursday at noon for Another View.
Support comes from Hampton Roads Community Foundation, carrying out your charitable wishes forever. Whether it's helping shelter animals, feeding the homeless, enhancing the arts, or supporting students. Learn more at leaveabequest.org.